when something quietly starts to break down. See, it doesn't always show up in the numbers first. The human instinct kicks in, and it is fight, flight, or freeze. And people start to contract, trying to control things more tightly, structure things more tightly, but that can often backfire. Let go of the idea that things are predictable, that uncertainty is something to be avoided.
Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Logbook Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Bernard. You can find me on social at @itzachb. In each episode, I bring on experts from various industries for you to learn about the strategies and insights driving extreme business growth. Today, we're joined by Anne McGee Stinson, co-owner and managing partner of InteraWorks, a global leadership and performance development firm that works with leaders and organizations to strengthen alignment, build trust, and create culture where performance and purpose stays in sync. Anne brings in over 30 years of experience as an executive leadership coach and consultant, having worked with some of the most world-recognized organizations, including Dell, Microsoft, and Deloitte. But her path to this work is anything but conventional. Anne, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Zach. Good to be here.
I love it. Well, one of the things that I always like to ask any of the guests that we have on, as it is a business entrepreneurship type podcast, and you've obviously been around the block, to put it simply, is if you had to like restart your entrepreneurial entrepreneurship journey, what's kind of like the one thing that you feel maybe you would do differently that maybe some entrepreneurs get totally wrong or they just don't do?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of books out there and there's a lot of guidance for how to start up a business and so on and so forth. But what I've learned and what was most helpful to me is not necessarily just the strategy and the techniques and the tools and, you know, having a good plan, business plan, et cetera, but really paying attention to my intuition, paying attention to the energy that goes into the organization, the relationships, and really paying attention to those invisible things that really drive performance in an organization. So you can always bring in new tools. You can always bring in new strategies. You can always do another spreadsheet. But at the end of the day, what I've really learned is it's the energy of the organization that really powers the results.
Interesting. That's not one that I've heard of before. A lot of people are like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of mistakes that I've done. Maybe I would have hired someone sooner or anything like that. But no, that's a pretty original take. And I don't think we've had anyone on the leadership side of things on the show before. So I think that's maybe one of the reasons here. But for people who aren't really familiar with like InteraWorks, I'd love to better understand what you guys do. Where do you even start? Like when a leadership team comes to you, what does that actually look like from day one? And what are you really trying to like help them see or maybe even shift within the organization?
Yeah, it's a good question because oftentimes leaders come to us and they think they have one issue. It might be an operational thing. It's usually around something around productivity, how to be more productive or how to have their teams be more productive. Or it might be something around performance, like they just don't understand why they're not getting the results that they want to set out to get. So we don't assume anything. The first thing that we do is go into deep discovery and ask a lot of questions to uncover what's underneath the outcomes that a leader might be getting. And oftentimes that process by itself is so informative and so enlightening for a leader because, as I said, they come in thinking they want one thing. And if they address that one thing, they would not get the results that they really want. So that discovery process of asking questions and seeing what are the behaviors, what are the outcomes that you really want to see for yourself or for your team by itself can be transformative.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of us are like, oh, I have this problem. And then you speak to someone who has like an outside perspective. It's like, no, you don't have this problem. You have this problem. It's like, what? Yeah. Well, what's going on here? And then there's like this
we wanna be
shift.
Really careful because there is, and I'm saying this cautiously because I don't want to generalize, but there can be a checklist kind of mentality. is, you know, we just want to check the list, and maybe it's communication seems to be the issue. So let's do a communication course. Not always. So that's why we want to do some discovery to see what's underneath that communication issue.
Yeah, you don't want to like just make assumptions on anything. Like you need to have a little discovery first before diving in the deep end here. But one of the things that I find comes up a lot in like these types of conversation is that this idea of the culture and performance are somehow like odd. Like leaders feel that they have to pick like one or the other, to put it simply. Mm-hmm. And you're inside these organizations pretty much like day and night. And this tension that plays out in real time, like you're seeing it. So I guess I'm kind of curious, what actually goes on when a team has strong numbers on paper, but something underneath them is like quietly starting to like break down here?
Ooh, well, the answer is in the question, right? When something quietly starts to break down. See, you can sense that, right?
Yeah.
It's quiet. And it doesn't always show up in the numbers first. Mm-hmm. But I think leaders, and especially leaders who are, again, attuned to the energy of their team, will begin to sense something like, oh, something's off. Something's quietly, you know, starting to break down. That's the moment where leaders need to just really pay close attention and start asking different questions, because you cannot bring in a tool. Another spreadsheet isn't going to solve that. That is a dynamic in an organization. And I think the key here is that we begin to think about organizations as a living organism. So a living organism has, you know, ebbs and flows and good days and bad days. But when a leader starts to sense something quietly breaking down, wow, that is really time to pay attention and ask a different question.
Yeah, it's like the gut feeling that you have sometimes. Like, I probably shouldn't be doing this. Like the same thing within like an organization from experience. I love that. And one thing that I'd be kind of curious though is like you work with some pretty like complex like environment. Like I think I saw like government agencies, global corporation, basically teams that are under like a lot of pressure, to put it very simply. Yeah. And I think like the natural instinct for a lot of like leaders in this kind of environment is to maybe tighten the grip, more structure, more control, more predictability. Where does that instinct tend to go wrong? Because I have a feeling in some capacity can be helpful, and that's like the natural thing to do. But it's maybe not always a good thing to do in your company here.
Yeah. Very true. So you're talking about an instinct. That's a human instinct, right? And when the outside world is throwing up signals that, signal threat or danger, human beings, the human instinct kicks in, and it is fight, flight, or freeze. And people start to contract. Right? They start to contract and leaders contract. Leaders are not exempt from human instinct. So when a leader contracts, that's exactly what we start to see, is gripping, you know, trying to control things more tightly, trying to, structure things more tightly, micromanaging, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that can often backfire and create even more unintended results. So the instinct is, yes, fight, flight, or freeze. And especially right now, holy cow, right? There's so much going on in the pace and the complexity. So that is the instinct, and we want to acknowledge it, but we don't want to give in to it. So I think when we acknowledge, you can feel that again, you can feel that, ooh, I want to control this. Pay attention to that too.
Yeah. And I know we talk a lot about like instinct, and I feel like that itself is less something that you can build a structure on, like a process. I mean, it's an instinct, but I'd kind of be curious, is there a framework or some sort of like teaching that you help leaders better understand these instincts to know exactly like how to act on them? Because obviously they might have an instinct to do something specific, and that might be the totally wrong move that will plummet the entire company in like the next few months. And then the other one that they didn't think of at first might be the move that actually quadrupled the company. It's like, wow, that was so simple.
Yeah, well, the first thing that we want to do is to provide leaders and their teams with an understanding of those instincts. So we deal a lot with neuroscience, and we have done our homework on, mm-hmm. so we know how the human central nervous system responds under pressure, and we also have the tools and the techniques and the strategies, very simple, very yeah. powerful, that can help overcome those instinctual responses. So I think yeah. equipping people with the understanding, hey, you know, you're a human being working inside a very complex system, and these things are going to happen. I think one of the, you know, the project that we're doing with the Nashville PD comes to mind, because mm-hmm. when we talk about people working under pressure, cops, right?
That's the pure definition.
It doesn't get harder than that. But yeah. again, the tools and the techniques to be able to manage your own response and your central nervous system in the midst of that complexity, high stress, high stakes situations, yeah. it's available to everyone.
Yeah. And I feel like not a lot of people think about these types of things. Like when you're thinking about like leadership, it's like, okay, managing people and everything. But it, you tend to focus less on like these aspects, like the neuroscience and everything like that, that not a lot of people think about, which I think is always interesting when you mix that within like leadership. And you talk a little bit about obviously the work that you're doing with the cops, for example. Are there any like simple, like little exercise things that you can do as a leader that you feel can help you be maybe more in tune with your intuition, know exactly like what to do, or like any little like simple, like actionable little exercise or tips there?
So many. I don't know where to start. So many, but let me give you one really quick one. One would be name it to tame it. Simple, okay. right? So when we name something, we just say, yeah, I'm feeling really uptight about this, or I'm having a reaction to what you just said. Yeah. You know, when you name it, what you're actually doing, there's some deep neuroscience here, is you're moving it from an emotion to the upper part of the brain where judgment and higher level thinking resides. And so that gives you power over it. So name it to tame it takes it out of just this swirling emotional mess, this quagmire, and puts it into something that a leader then can objectify, put out there and say, okay, I'm going to deal with it this way. Far more substantial and resourceful.
Interesting. That's a good one, because I mean, I feel a lot in like the mindset aspect of things, whether you're in leadership or anything like that. Like I've heard that before. Like, yeah, like name it, like address it, like understand that you're feeling this like emotion. And then once you've addressed it, that it's there, this is where you can act on it, and then maybe you can do different things to address that here.
Yeah, it's great. And we just want to give people the neuroscience behind it, because otherwise the tool could easily be forgotten. But when you understand this is how your brain works, and this is going to give you access to deeper resources, I think it weights it a little bit.
Yeah, and like when you work with like leaders, do you find that oftentimes they are not like to in tune with their instincts, or maybe they're not too like aware of like the neuroscience, because I know it's obviously something that you help them with, teach them. But I'd be curious to hear, like, do you often see people that maybe already aware of that, or it's like totally usually like non-existent and you have to like build that up from A to Z?
Yeah, well, Zach, I mean, the world is in a time of transition. Mm-hmm. So this is the work now. You have to understand that 30, 35 years ago, leaders became leaders because they were skilled and educated in managing teams, right? 30, 35 years ago, we didn't have the medical technology to understand what was happening inside the human brain. Now we have all this, you know, imaging and MRIs and all kinds of brain scanning technology. That now we have a much better understanding of what's happening inside the human being when they respond or react, and what's happening in the brain and what areas of the brain are firing, et cetera. But to integrate that into the way that we manage and lead is not something that is fully mainstream yet. And this is part of our work, is we'd love to see that mainstream. It's coming on, but it's it's not yet there and we're in transition. So I think it's very promising that we now know these things. But in the meantime, we have leaders who have been trained and habituated into managing and leading in a certain way, and it's command and control. That's not going to work for much longer.
it's like reshaping like your entire beliefs, habits, and like how you act as a leader with a different like approach. So there's obviously a little bit of legwork involved in that entire like process to make sure it works properly, but there's so many advantages at getting it correctly and leading your team properly here. But I know we talked about like obviously the mindset, like instinct and everything like that. And one of the things that you talk about is this shift from like managing people to designing systems. And I think that's like a concept that like it sounds great, like theory, but for a leader who spent like their entire career being rewarded for always having the answers, staying in control, that's a pretty like significant thing to like let go of. What does that transition actually look like? And what does a leader usually have to, I guess, confront themselves to make it like actually stay, like make it real?
Yeah, well, I'm living that. I mean, that's not just theory for me, because as you said, I've been around the block a few times. So yes, that's accurate. But understand that leadership up until recently has been defined on an industrial age model. And that was a model of replication, right? And predictability. Mm-hmm. We're on an assembly line. If you do the same thing every time, you get the same result. That is not the environment that we live in anymore. And in that industrial age environment, normally you had a leader who was educated, who did have all the answers, and was in a position of telling people how to do things well or how to do things right. Yeah. That's gone. Everybody's educated. Everybody has ideas. Everybody has opinions and perspectives on how to do things well or how to do things better. And so a leader who is still in that industrial age mindset is probably, in, you know, there are exceptions here, because I want to just say, you know, there are still assembly line industries, but even those are converting to AI and, you know, so on and so forth. So we're in a big, big, big transition. It hasn't been this complex or dramatic since the transition to the industrial age.
Yeah. And you mentioned like AI like really quickly. And I mean, everyone has like a different perception on like AI and everything like that. And I feel like I've spoken to a lot of people, marketing, finance, everything. And I always see like where AI can be used as like a use case. But I don't think I've ever seen or heard anyone talk about how AI can be used in more like the leadership aspect of things. And I'm not sure if that's something that you guys are leveraging, teaching people to use, but I'd really be curious to see like where you see that fit into like the puzzle and perhaps how leaders can benefit from using it within their leadership here.
Perspective.
Okay.
AI helps to provide, it's a tool, just like a hammer. Yeah. And so just like a hammer or any other tool, it will be as useful as the person who is wielding it. And so we see AI as a force multiplier, as a thinking partner to gain a broader perspective and a broader context. That's what it does really well. If we're just using it as a taskmaster, I think we're really losing a real opportunity here. But to gain perspective and as a thinking partner and a force multiplier, it's powerful. It's a tool. So garbage in, garbage out. It's only going to provide you know, what you ask it. And so again, you know, expand your perspective and broaden that, and how you use that tool can be really, really powerful.
Yeah. Like the better input that you put in, the better output that you'll get. I mean, like one of the things you talked about, like perspective, and I want to touch onto this a little bit. I feel like one of the things I always like to do is I'll take people that are smarter than me, like certain department. I'm going to take all the information they've talked about, put down a little like bubble project, and then I can get advice based on certain things. So I'm like, that totally makes sense. And oftentimes it's things that you've already learned, but reminding yourself of it usually is like a big part of like the equation. I don't remember who said that, but I think like 90% is just like relearning, like getting a reminder of what you've already learned, which I think is always interesting. So it helps with getting a better perspective or broader perspective in some capacity here. But one of the things I thought was interesting though, earlier we talked about like spreadsheets and everything. Like you said, like, yeah, it's not always just a spreadsheet or a new tool or anything like that. But I'm guessing you're saying that because a lot of the leaders that you work with, maybe they push back sometimes. They're like, yeah, we already have those tools. We already have the framework. We have the processes. Mm-hmm. And maybe they do. But what's kind of like your response to that? What's usually going underneath that when a team has like all the right infrastructure in place, but they're still not getting the results that they're actually after?
Happens all the time.
Right? I figured.
Happens all the time. So you need both. Listen, yeah. I love a good spreadsheet. I love it, love it, love it. Because it presents data, but data is only half of the equation. What do you do with that data? You know, where's the human judgment in amidst that data? So you need both. And that's really all I'm saying. Let's use the tools, but let's remember our organizations are living systems. Mm-hmm. And so there's this holistic, organic flow that has to happen in the utilization of tools.
Yeah, I love it. And for like any, like just like wrapping things up here, for any leaders listening, what I always like to do is make it actionable. Like give them like any piece of advice, like, oh, okay, like I could look at implementing this in the next days, weeks, months, whatever you want to call it. Is there maybe like 2-3 bullet points, little things that you're like, hey, if you're a leader today, you're like, hey, I want to be able to get to that next level. I'm not really sure where I'm going. I'm hearing Anne talk about this instinct and everything like that, but what should I be doing? Are there any like very simple little action points or items that you're like, hey, you should be looking at this first?
You mentioned one, and it's one that is, you know, is why you're a successful entrepreneur as well, is like go out and get some new perspective. Go ask questions, challenge your belief systems, right? Yeah. Challenge those, ask questions so that you're not stuck in a polarity or in a belief system that is limited. That's one of the most powerful things that leaders can do. I would say that's one thing to do. One thing to stop doing is let go of the idea that things are predictable, that uncertainty is something to be avoided. We are living in massively complex times. And in that complexity, certainty, predictability, and what the industrial age model are dangerous. They're dangerous. Stop it. So those are the two things I would say. Expand your perspective and stop looking for certainty and predictability. Embrace complexity, because that's the world that we're living in, and it requires us different models of thinking, different models of managing, different models of leading.
Yeah. And I feel that goes back to like expanding like your perspective, learning different things, getting different feedback, learning new insights and everything like that. It's like the same thing when we talked about AI, like, oh, all these different perspectives of people. It's like, yeah, if you're attacking complexity, you're not going to understand everything at once. But once you're able to push through that, you're going to have like this moat where like maybe a lot of other people don't have that. And I feel that's a lot of people, I mean, even I, in some cases, I'm like, you know, this sounds hard, but if we do it properly, like this could change like a lot of things. And I feel like as leaders, we have to push through it. It's very important here.
So that, exactly. It needs to change. It must change. Oh, yeah. It's changing whether we want it or not. So we might as well shift our thinking and our perspective and our approach to accommodate the change that is happening, but also to benefit from it. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Anne, I really appreciate you coming on the show here. And I know you're active on a couple of places. I know you have a book, you have the LinkedIn, you have the website. Where should people go if they want to reach out with you, they want to talk to you? What's the best places to find you here?
Yeah, I would contact me at anne.mcgee-stinson@interaworks.com, or just go visit our website, interaworks.com.
Perfect. So we're going to put down like the show notes if anyone wants to like reach out, get in touch. And I know you're on LinkedIn too, so we're going to make sure to put that there if anyone wants to reach out there too. But no, you heard that, everyone. So head over to interiorworks.com if you want to learn more. And then to your listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, review, reach out, and here. Until then, keep pushing. And yeah, we'll see you in the next one.